for argument this morning is In the Matter of Technic, appeal of Sheila Hamilton. Mr. Nash.
May it please the court.
Hold on. Where is Mr. Hartman?
I have no idea. There was a
you
motion.
You are not your brother's keeper in this respect. I should like to know where Mr. Hartman is.
There appeared to be somebody who had signed in there, Judge. I looked just before you came out. Do you want me to double-check that and make sure I saw you?
No, the clerk's office is taking care of this as we speak.
Okay.
Would you just take a seat and we will figure out where Mr. Hartman is? It looks like he was simply playing hooky. Mr. Hartman, we expect you to be here at the beginning of oral argument and not stroll in at your own convenience in the middle of the argument.
I apologize.
Mr. Nash.
May it please the court, I'm Gordon Nash and I appear here on behalf of Sheila Hamilton, the appellant. We are appealing an order from the United States District Court affirming an order of the Bankruptcy Court holding my client, Sheila Hamilton, in contempt of court. Ms. Hamilton is a Scottish citizen. She was a minority shareholder of Technic LLC, the debtor in the underlying bankruptcy court. As the district court noted in an order entered in October of 2006, she was not a party to the bankruptcy proceeding. We've offered a number of very simple and straightforward reasons for vacating the contempt ruling. I'm not going to go through all the facts that I outlined in our brief, but I think we've detailed the history of the case in, I think, a reasonably accurate manner. The first reason I suggest to the court or offer the court for vacating the contempt ruling is a very fundamental one. Sheila Hamilton was never personally served with SDI's contempt motion or the rule to show cause. This basic requirement of due process cannot be skipped.
Mr. Nash, I have some difficulty figuring out what relation Ms. Hamilton has to this litigation. Your brief and SDI's brief describe her as, quote, the debtor's representative. And I can't figure out what that is. What do you mean when you say that?
I think the debtor, as I understand bankruptcy law, is obligated to designate a representative to speak for the debtor, okay? And she submitted herself, pursuant to that obligation, to a deposition in November of 2005. She was not, however,
I'm lost. Is this, in your view, some term in the bankruptcy code? Because if in fact Ms. Hamilton is the alter ego of the debtor here, then I don't see why she has to be served.
I don't think
so. But if, on the other hand, she's something else, the source of my puzzlement is that there appears to be no such concept in bankruptcy law. I have no real idea what the parties, and for that matter the district court, are talking about when they describe Hamilton as a, quote, debtor's representative.
I look to find out exactly what that term might mean. She was an officer of the corporation. If that means
that concept, I understand. Hold on. If that's the way in which Hamilton is appearing, then she's entitled to personal service. And if, on the other hand, this debtor's representative is something like the trustee for the debtor in possession before a trustee is named, then Hamilton would be a party in her own right and wouldn't need to be served separately.
Well, she,
I need to figure out, I think, which of these it is before we can resolve the appeal.
I think she was only, in essence, the officer of the corporation. She submitted to a deposition. She gave her deposition. And
well,
what, in your view,
made her a, quote, debtor's representative?
I believe there was a document filed in connection with the bankruptcy where you have to fill in.
Filed by whom?
By the debtor, not by her.
All right.
And
so, I completely understand the argument that if Technic fills out a document saying, I name Sheila Hamilton as my representative, that nothing is binding on Hamilton until she assents or gets service. But if Hamilton filled out a document saying, I am stepping forward as the person to talk to when you talk to Technic, then it's much harder to see how she's in a position to say, and you should have done something else, because that submits to the jurisdiction of the court.
I don't think she did, and
is
nobody...
Is it clear in this record whether it is Technic or Hamilton who stepped forward as debtor's representative?
She gave her deposition.
I know that, but
I want to know, look,
counsel, we can't both talk at once.
I'm sorry.
I want to know how she came to be debtor's representative. You say it was a filing by Technic.
That's
correct. Is it clear in the record that it was only by Technic and not by her?
It was only by Technic, because Technic is the
Where
only
do
debtor.
Where do I go in the record to find that?
I don't know that I have the form here.
Perhaps on rebuttal you can tell me, and I'll be asking the same question of Mr. Hartman.
If she is held in contempt in her individual capacity, as an individual, she is entitled, as an individual, under the bankruptcy rules, under the Murphy case, to service the process. And I think it's that simple. If she testifies as an officer of Technic at a deposition, but later on somebody wants to hold her personally in contempt to court, she has the right, just as any other individual, to service of a complaint and an opportunity to answer. That was never done here. That's the only way she becomes a party to the bankruptcy court proceeding. She was a non-party. The district court found that specifically. The other point that I want to make for the court is there was no proof on which to base the contempt ruling in any event. If you look at the record, the primary witness about the financial records that were offered by Technic at her deposition was an IT person at Freeborn and Peters who said the computer disk that they were given could not be opened. They never raised that issue at the time of her deposition. They never raised that issue when they filed the motion for contempt. They only raised that issue at the end of January, almost 3 months after they had it. And as it proved out in the hearing that was had, that was absolutely wrong. The document, in fact, contained all the financial records of the debtor. And that's why the bankruptcy court judge concluded that there was no basis for holding the debtor in contempt. So if there was no basis for holding the debtor in contempt, there could be no basis for holding the debtor's representative, whatever that term may mean, in contempt. So if they're going to hold her in contempt individually, they better have a basis for it in the record. And there was simply no proof. You can look at that hearing all you want, you find no proof. The third reason we asked to reverse the district court's finding was the district court relied on a deposition transcript that was never submitted as evidence in the underlying hearing in the bankruptcy court. And the district court, sitting as an appellate court, has the same obligation that this court would have. You don't consider evidence in the appellate court that was never offered in the trial court, and that's the simple point there. And clearly the bankruptcy courts or the district court judge did exactly that, and I think that's a violation of due process as well. I'll reserve my time, and I'll see if I have that document among the papers I brought over here, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Nash. Mr. Hartman.
May it please the Court, Stephen Hartman for the Appellee Systems Division, Inc., SDI.
Now, you also refer to Hamilton as a debtor's representative. What do you mean by that, and how did she get to be one?
She signed the bankruptcy petition on the first day and all of the schedules. So she was the designated officer that did those filings. One of the papers that was filed along with all of the things she signed was the designating her as the representative. What that requires her to do
is that something that she consented to?
Well, she signed all the papers. I don't have the piece of paper that she signed. I mean, there were a stack of papers filed.
You and Mr. Nash don't agree on whether Hamilton consented to be the debtor's representative in this case.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Nash said in no uncertain terms that Hamilton had not so consented.
Well, I think she did because it was done in conjunction with filing the petition and all the other papers that she did sign.
All right. So you think this is filed with the petition. I ask this not only because this is pertinent to the question whether she needs to be served separately. If she's already filed what amounts to her personal appearance in the bankruptcy, she doesn't need to be served separately. I ask this because this seems to bear on appellate jurisdiction. If she's already filed what amounts to a personal appearance in the bankruptcy, then we don't have jurisdiction over her appeal.
I don't follow that. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
An order holding someone in civil contempt in a case to which they're already a party is not appealable. That's the holding of the Supreme Court in United States against Ryan. And that's just black-letter law. It's not clear that either side was aware of this when they filed their papers. But only third parties, only real third parties, can appeal from contempt adjudications before the end of the case.
The one thing I can tell you about a debtor's representative is that their obligation is to attend and be the representative at the 341 first meeting of creditors. And that is a deposition, and the debtor's representative has to answer the questions about the assets and liabilities at the beginning of the case. However, the deposition that we're talking about that was pursuant to the subpoena was a 2004 deposition taken by SDI as the creditor. You know, the sole purpose for this bankruptcy case being filed was to delay SDI's efforts to collect its $3-point-something-million judgment. SDI is the only creditor in this case, and
what is the current status of SGI's claim in the underlying bankruptcy?
SDI withdrew. Well, first of all, my firm is not counsel to SDI in the bankruptcy any longer. That was the subject of a motion that's pending before Your Honors to withdraw as counsel in this case. I was intending to bring that up. I'm not sure if I should or not, but it's a pending motion. So we don't represent SDI.
Answer my question.
Yes,
please.
Your Honor. SDI withdrew its proof of claim in the bankruptcy.
And did the trustee prove?
I believe there was an objection filed. SDI is a scheduled creditor in the bankruptcy, so it has a claim in that regard.
Then could you answer my question? Is SGI now gone as a party in the bankruptcy, or has it tried to withdraw and been met by an objection so that there is still ongoing litigation about SGI's status?
It tried to withdraw its claim. It's ongoing litigation, and it also is a scheduled creditor, which would make it a party in interest as a scheduled creditor.
All right. So there's let me just be sure I understand. SGI wants out. The trustee does not want SGI out. Can you tell me why?
Your Honor, this is the subject of a dispute between the trustee and SDI. We were counsel to
I'm asking if you can tell me why, what the nature of the dispute is.
SDI was pursuing settlement discussions in California. SDI is pursuing post-judgment collection proceedings against other non-debtor entities in California where the judgment was entered. And the trustee in the bankruptcy has sought to and has obtained an injunction against SDI attempting to settle with the other judgment debtors. And there is an adversary that was filed in the bankruptcy by the trustee against SDI for an injunction. There also is an order entered in California.
I'm asking, finally, can you tell me why the trustee has opposed the motion to withdraw the claim? Normally, one would think that the withdrawal of a $3.2 million claim would make the estate in bankruptcy better off. So the fact that the trustee is against the withdrawal is a surprise. I'm just wondering why.
I don't know the trustee's strategy. I suspect they may be trying to make sure the bankruptcy court has jurisdiction over SDI with respect to some sort of global resolution.
Surely the trustee has given a reason. And surely you have read the document and know what reason the trustee gave. I haven't. That's why I'm asking you.
This happened after we withdrew, Your Honor. So I don't know what he
said. So you stopped preparing for the case.
May I proceed? Your Honor, the documents that were produced by the debtor, the general ledgers and other documents, were all in code. There was no identification of who the customers or vendors were on all these general ledgers. And that is the information that's being sought pursuant to the subpoena issued to Sheila Hamilton. Because their argument is that, well, the debtor doesn't have control of its own customer names and vendor names, which are referenced in its own ledgers, that information is owned by a different Technic entity. And that different Technic entity then sold it to yet a different Technic entity. Now, the record in this case is very clear. The testimony on the record by Mr. McCulloch, who is a Technic representative, came here and testified, was that all of the Technic entities that had some control over this customer information are owned by and managed by Sheila Hamilton and Jonathan Kennett. So they had the ability to produce these, or Ms. Hamilton had the ability to produce this information and chose not to. They offered up no testimony as to why there was some reason why she could not produce the information. With respect to the jurisdictional issue, the counsel did not talk about the basis for the court's ruling, which was waiver, and perhaps that was because of the record. Now, the record is that Sheila Hamilton was represented personally by the Coleman and Anderson firm at her deposition on November 1st, 2005, and she was represented personally throughout with respect to all of the various objections and motions that they filed to the subpoenas and then to the contempt.
What is the significance you see in that? If a plaintiff names two defendants and the same law firm represents both people, is it enough to serve only one of them with process and ignore the other? That's the argument you seem to be making.
Your Honor, she had submitted herself to jurisdiction by not requiring personal service. She attended the deposition and was personally served without personal service. And then her lawyer that represented her at the deposition filed motion after motion after motion.
Serve somebody with process to get them to attend a deposition. All right, you serve somebody with process to make them a party and get relief against them in the case. If all you want them to do is show up for a deposition, you don't have to serve them with a summons and so on. Right? Surely you're not saying that anybody who shows up for a deposition is therefore a party in the litigation and that relief can be ordered against them.
It's a waiver argument, Your Honor. It's purely arguing that their attorney that had been representing them all along stood up and made the arguments on her behalf at the contempt hearings that occurred and filed a motion to vacate the contempt, making all of the arguments on her behalf, at the same time as the same attorney, the Coleman and Anderson firm, was representing Sheila Hamilton in an adversary case that was filed against her by the trustee. So he was, the same attorneys were representing her starting in March 2006 in the adversary. So her lawyers were the ones that were attending the hearing, making arguments, putting on evidence in opposition to the contempt.
Was she properly served with process in the adversary proceeding?
Yes.
Then why don't you argue that that service of process made her a party in this litigation? Because the adversary proceeding is part of the bankruptcy case.
Yes. She was properly and personally served in February of 2006 in the adversary case. And her attorneys appeared on March 20th, 2006. The court did not enter the contempt.
Then why?
Until after that date.
Why did the bankruptcy court describe her as a non-party if she had been served with process in this bankruptcy case?
Well, she had not been served at the time the subpoena was issued and the time we filed the motion. So it was, our thinking was to go after her as a non-party subpoenaed witness. But then she was subsequently served in the adversary case personally and participated in that case, filed motions, and there were evidentiary hearings in the adversary on the question of personal jurisdiction over her, which she lost. They never argued that she wasn't personally served in this case. All they argued was that she couldn't be subpoenaed as an individual, only as a representative of the company. We ask that the court's decision be affirmed. If there are no other questions, I...
Thank you, Mr. Hartman.
Thank you.
Mr. Nash.
First,
I've got two questions now. One goes back to this representative business on which the two of you seem to be in irreconcilable conflict. And the other has to do with the statement just made that Hamilton has, in fact, been served with process in the regular way.
First, with respect to the question about her status as the debtor's representative, there is a document, and unfortunately I don't have it in the records I brought over here, but there is a document that she apparently signed as part of the debtor's petition. I believe that does not make her a party to the bankruptcy proceeding. The party is the debtor. Next, with respect to the adversary proceeding that was filed against her by SDI, yes, apparently there was an adversary proceeding and there was service on her. I do not believe that that service had been effected at the time of the hearing in this case. More importantly, I believe that that adversary complaint does not relate to the charges that are the basis for the contempt. In other words,
That's not the question. Now, I may be wrong, but if somebody is served with process in an adversary complaint, this is just a technical question of bankruptcy law. If somebody is served with process in an adversary proceeding, does that make the person a party for the purpose of the core proceedings in the bankruptcy? That's the technical question.
I don't believe it does, but I can't honestly say to the court.
Belief, or is it a question of research?
No, I have not researched that. I don't mean to suggest that I have.
Both parties, both sides, to file supplemental memos within the next 10 days addressing the question whether someone who is a party to an adversary proceeding in a bankruptcy is therefore a party to the core proceedings in the bankruptcy. That's one. And two is, what is the legal effect of somebody signing a statement saying, I designate myself as the debtor's representative? We really need to know those two things.
All right. Can I address the other question that you asked about SDI status? There is now ongoing litigation between SDI. This is outside of our record, but since it came up, I'm going to give you what my understanding is. There is ongoing litigation between the trustee in the bankruptcy court and SDI, and it all evolves around the effort of the trustee to work out a settlement that would resolve all these issues, which my understanding is SDI opposes. So I think that's the derivation of that particular controversy. We'll address the issues that Your Honor has raised. Scott, you have them. And I'll just say that I still think that she's entitled to a service of a rule to show cause that's required by the bankruptcy rule. And the adversary complaint certainly doesn't raise that issue. And nobody had filed an appearance on her behalf at the time the bankruptcy court had the hearing on the contempt motion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nash. And let me be sure that the two of you understand what it is we need addressed within 10 days. As I see it, there are two questions. One is whether somebody who is a party to an adversary proceeding is therefore a party to the core proceeding in bankruptcy as well. And the second is whether personal consent to be a debtor's representative amounts to consent to personal jurisdiction over the debtor's representative. Those two questions, and they're technical questions of bankruptcy law, but we really need answers to them.
We'll do our best, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.